And have the rest of you accuse me of tearing the group apart and picking favorites? She frowned at him, the pleasant buzz inside her not abating in the slightest. You saw what happened when I asked Kian to continue surrogating for me.
A conversation for another time, I think.
He carefully arranged his expression.
Ready to go inside? They can't fuck with the cameras this time. It would be too suspicious.
So, how are we going to talk? She asked, confused. Why would Kaelin call for a group meeting?
Because five of his alphas are actively stepping in to nurture your bond while the officials scour the countryside for your true mate, and because you're about to be moved into Dorme, which makes you one of his charges. A little Sigma Alpha.
She scoffed, the laugh leaving her unwillingly. Right. I thought we were going to talk about... She swallowed, unable to continue.
We'll talk about the attack.
He brushed her cheek lightly.
Just remember to be careful with what you say, that's all.
It should have been weird and humiliating to continue a normal conversation after what he had just done, but instead it felt natural. Theodore made her feel comfortable, easily sidestepping between the role of surrogate and friend. They entered the common room quietly, glancing around the empty space before Theodore took her hand and tugged her toward the stairs. The alphas had dragged two of the seating areas together on the rooftop, forming one long table with enough chairs for all of them. Moses was in the kitchen, holding a glass pitcher of water when they reached the top of the stairs. His nostrils flared, flicking between Theodore and Isabel, and then his grip loosened on the pitcher, leaving it to shatter against the floor. Theodore ignored him, steering her toward one of the free chairs. The rest of the alphas seemed confused by Moses, who stood as still as a statue, until she reached the table, and then they all reacted at once. Easton pounced to his feet, backing away from the table and swearing under his breath. Kaelin was gripping the edge of the table so hard she heard the groan of stone cracking. Reed and Spade both twitched, their eyes slamming into her, their nostrils flaring. Nico shoved his chair back, muttering about the broken glass as he escaped to the kitchen. Sato, who sat at the far end of the table, arched a dark brow at her, a heavy question in his onyx eyes. Kian rubbed his mouth like he was swallowing back a laugh. Killian was the only one who didn't do anything weird. He strode over to her and captured her into a tight hug that pulled her feet from the ground. When he sat her down again, he suddenly whirled on Theodore, snatching his wrist and pulling Theodore's hand up between them.
"Wash your hands before you eat,"
he said silkily, his tone hiding an undercurrent of sharpness. Isabel went white, finally realizing what everyone was reacting to. But as mortified as she was, the comfortable feeling of her blood singing happily through her veins pushed her to shrug off their stares and sit down. Killian immediately claimed the seat beside her, tucking her beneath his arm, his nose brushing her hair.
"You smell happy to see us," he said.
"Shut the hell up,"
she elbowed him. He chuckled, dragging her closer. The others stared at the two of them like they were speaking a foreign language.
"Well,"
Easton cleared his throat, glaring at Theodore for several awkward and prolonged seconds before pulling out a seat opposite Isabel.
"It's good to see you awake."
"So awake,"
Kian drawled, flashing her a wry grin.
"Super switched on."
"You can also shut the hell up."
She glared at him before shyly flicking her eyes to Easton's tie. "And, thank you, Professor." There was a light scoffing sound from the other side of the table. She wasn't sure who it came from because the others were still moving around. Nico and Moses brought over half a dozen dishes from the kitchen before Moses picked up Theodore's chair, dragging it and Theodore away from Isabel. He inserted a chair between them and sank into it, shaking his head at his brother. Theodore wasn't even paying attention. He was loading his plate up with food like he hadn't eaten in a week.
"I'm sure you have a lot of questions,"
Easton continued, ignoring the Kane twins.
"What happened to them?"
The question almost exploded out of her,
She'd been waiting to ask it since she opened her eyes in the hospital.
Them?
Kaelin demanded. The whole table stilled. Moses dropped something else. More glass shattered.
Someone else was there,
Sato snarled.
Nobody else entered the house. We were watching. Eve didn't mention a second person in her confession, and her confession was enough to get her killed, so we assumed she wasn't lying.
Isabel curled her fingers around her fork, her stomach suddenly churning as she gazed at the food laid out before her. There was a boy. I can't remember his name. He was leaving the house when I came in, then he must have looped around and entered through the back.
I remember him,
Kian said.
Tall, dark hair. Had a look on his face like he was smarter than everyone else. Wore an old motorcycle jacket. Aaron,
Killian croaked. Another glass exploded, Easton cursing as he shook out his hand.
Aaron?
Kian's voice was heavy with dread.
As in... Yes.
Killian swallowed, all of the animation suddenly seeping out of him, his eyes taking on a vacant look.
My ex. He's not even a student.
Moses trailed off as Kaelin stood from the table, pulling out his phone and searching for a number before raising it to his ear and walking away.
And now he's as good as dead,
Killian said, still staring blankly at the table.
Eve already confessed.
Moses frowned over at Killian.
Why was Aaron even there?
Isabel swallowed, peeking at Killian. He didn't just look emotionless. She couldn't feel anything from him. Nothing at all. Somehow, that seemed worse than feeling a terrible, heavy pressure against her chest. They were both convinced that Killian was my mate, she said carefully.
Why would they think that?
Nico asked, his eyes razor-focused on her. She had never seen them so clear, the earthy green and rich brown hue blending together, binding her attention so well that she forgot to blink, tears springing up at the strain it took to hold his gaze. I told her. I broke my promise. This is all my fault.
I messed up.
I thought she was my friend. Nico leaned forward, drawing her further into that forest-green oasis, his power wrapping around her so subtly that she barely realized he was exerting his influence until it draped her like a second skin.
Why would she think that Killian is your mate?
He repeated, his voice soft. It would be too easy to lie, to claim that she had nothing to do with it. She could even use the cameras as an excuse. But they were the liars, not her. Because I told her everything, she said evenly. She let that hang in the air for a moment, before she warped the rest of the story for the cameras. Everything I wanted to believe, anyway. I told her Killian was my mate because I wished he was. I don't want my real mate. I don't know who he is. But Killian is nice to me. He cares about me. And he probably wouldn't ever make me complete the bond because he isn't into girls. She sagged back against her chair, dropping her fork and crossing her arms. They were quiet. Killian didn't even act like he had heard her. He was still staring at the same spot on the table.
That wasn't wise,
Easton finally said, as Kaelin returned to the table.
That was really fucking unwise, Moses growled, always the first to rip away a sugar coating.
I'm aware, she gritted, before tamping down on her defensiveness. They had warned her not to tell anyone, and she had promised she wouldn't. But knowing that she was technically in the wrong didn't make apologizing any easier. I'm sorry. Killian pushed away from the table, avoiding looking at anybody.
I need a minute.
She pushed her chair back to follow him, but Moses dropped his fingers to her thigh, barely even touching her as he shook his head, his frown deep and frightening. Kian stood, His expression troubled as he swept his eyes quickly over the table. He looked like he was about to say something before he changed his mind, striding off after Killian.
You should eat,
Easton assessed Isabel as the silence around the table grew deeper, more unsettling. She stared at the food piled onto the table that nobody else was reaching for, hearing the words Easton didn't say. He wanted her to eat so that she could leave. She moved to push back her chair again, but Moses repeated the same motion as before, his fingers tapping her thigh, pulling her up short.
Eat something, he suggested.
No, Alpha voice. She pushed her chair the rest of the way back and slipped away from the table.
Theodore fought back the urge to stop Isabel as she took several steps away from the table, and then several more, just to make sure she was out of arm's reach of anyone. The tantalizing, syrupy scent that he had managed to foster into a heady perfume only 10 minutes ago was already gaining a bitter edge, shrinking back into her veins until he was no longer beating back the need to do something incredibly stupid in front of 9 of his closest friends. It was bad enough that he had covered his fingers in her syrup and spread it over his dick. That was a completely unhinged thing to do, and it was the reason he was still half-hard, even now. Probably forever, despite everything. He noticed Nico relaxing slightly and Elijah's shoulders inching down. Kaelin and Mikkel no longer looked like they wanted to throw themselves off the rooftop, but a different kind of tension had descended, and none of them seemed to know exactly what to do with it. The situation was bad. Isabel might have just blown their cover entirely, but none of them were angry at her. At the situation, yes, but not at her. Unfortunately, she didn't seem to realize that.
I'm really sorry, Isabel repeated, staring at the ground with a frown.
There was only so much she could say, even though she had moved away from the cameras. She was struggling, fighting for the words, but it didn't matter. They knew what she was apologizing for. Did you tell anyone else these stories?
Kaelin asked.
Well, now Theodore wanted to shove him off the rooftop. Except Kaelin would only say that this was Theodore's fault. They had all told him right from the start that they couldn't trust her with their secrets when they barely even knew her. There was too much on the line. But they were also the ones who had lied to her first, and there were 10 of them. There was only one of her. They all had each other, and she had no one. Were they really going to be dicks just because she wanted one friend on her side? For the love of all things holy, keep your damn mouths shut. He glared at them one by one.
No, I didn't tell anyone else.
Isabel's scent was a cherry tree shoved through a wood chopper, splinters and dust flying everywhere, ripe juice running through the gears until it was oily and tainted. Kaelin was treating her like one of his alphas, asking the questions necessary to do damage control before he focused on the emotional side of things, or let Nico or Killian focus on the emotional side of things. Theodore just hoped Isabel wouldn't think he was angry at her. Kaelin seemed like he was angry all the time, but she would only need to see him truly angry once to know the difference. Isabel straightened slightly, her eyes flashing up to Kaelin's before flicking around to the other faces.
The assault wasn't my fault. They had it planned. They had their suspicions, and they were going to torture me no matter what I said. Eve has been torturing me since I came here. I was just too stupid to see it, because she's right. I'm gullible. I believe everything you tell me.
Her eyes flicked to Theodore, her stare landing harder than the slap he had told her she should give him. There it is. Despite the hollow pain he felt at her disappointed expression, he was glad she had said it. He nodded slightly, showing that he understood what she was saying, and some of the lines digging into her forehead eased. You're right. Gabriel stood from the table, tossing down his napkin. He wasn't going to eat the food anyway,
not with how many glasses had shattered and the possibility that a shard might have landed on his plate. Eve was already targeting you. All the students named by her in the attack before spring break are all on camera in different locations. They have solid alibis. She lied to you and the officials. I don't know who attacked you, but it wasn't her usual group of Delta friends. The only person at Ironside with a recorded ability to create darkness and shadow is a second-year beta, Kiki Rain. As for the other thing, ignore Moses. He's just worried about Killian.
Isabel sat up a little straighter, shocked at Spade's defense of her. She watched as he grabbed a bread roll and began to walk off, thinking that he was following Kian and Killian. Except he paused at the stairs, looking at her.
Come on, puppy.
She hurried over to him, so grateful for the escape that she could have hugged him, but he probably wouldn't have liked that. So instead, she just followed him quietly. Are you making sure I don't try to talk to Killian? She asked as they passed by the door to his room. Spade didn't answer, just handed her the bread roll and kept walking.
Eat,
he suggested as they rounded the lake. The bread tasted like cardboard, and her hands were shaking again, but she obeyed, nibbling it slowly as they walked. When they were halfway back to Dorm O, he finally sucked in a short breath, slipping her a quick, sideways look.
How are you feeling?
She shrugged. Honestly, not too bad right now.
Orgasms will do that. Sex will do more, but I would have to very strongly advise against that.
She choked on her own saliva and almost tripped over her own feet, but at least they were outside and the cameras likely couldn't hear what they were saying. The students passing on either side of the path, however. Isabel glanced back at them wildly, but they seemed to be too busy trying to snap pictures of her and Spade, as he caught her elbow to steady her, to have been paying attention to what he said.
I'm not even going to touch that, she eventually said. But thanks for the advice.
Anytime.
He kicked a rock out of his way, slowing his pace when she grew tired.
You're inexperienced. You might misconstrue things.
I haven't misconstrued anything. Theo told me why he was doing it.
Oh?
Spade seemed to smile a little.
Good for him.
Spade, this is weird.
Gabriel.
Yeah, I reckon he's weird, too.
His smile twitched a little wider, but then he licked his lips, and it was gone in a flash.
Let's be friends, Isabel. I want to keep an eye on you.
That's a terrible reason to propose friendship with someone.
It's not my only reason.
He slowed further and then turned suddenly to the right, forcing her to turn with him so that he wouldn't collide with her shoulder. He steered her toward the edge of the lake, where there were fewer people, and then took a seat on the solitary bench overlooking the water. His gaze turned toward the dock that she was uncomfortably familiar with. He tapped the bench beside him, and she sat, tucking her cold hands between her thighs and rolling her lips together, choosing to look anywhere except the dock.
Why are we stopping? She asked.
Because you need to catch your breath. Your heart rate is too high. I can see your pulse jumping in your neck. Even with Theo's assistance, this is still your first night out of the hospital, and you went immediately into a high-stress situation instead of the bond-soothing activity with several of your surrogates, as Elijah had planned.
Okay.
She kicked her shoes, enjoying the brush of her soles against the wooden planks.
So what's the other reason you want to be friends, if it's not just to keep an eye on me?
I have two best friends who share a single defining quality. They have sacrificed greatly for me. You exhibited the same quality. By my definition, we're already close friends. I'm just making it known.
She stopped kicking her legs, her brow furrowing.
I don't think I...
He dropped his head to the side, suddenly giving her his full attention, and the sentence died on her lips.
You have sacrificed,
he assured her.
Deliberately, though not mindfully.
Yes.
She studied his face, trying not to wither under that much attention.
I deliberately, but not mindfully, sacrifice myself for people all the time.
It's my thing.
You're supposed to use a different tone of voice when expressing sarcasm.
Are you a dictionary?
Try a mocking intonation. If you forget to make it obvious in the moment, you could add a chuckle at the end.
Oh my God. She gazed at him. You're malfunctioning.
He scoffed, shaking his head. A blonde strand of hair fell into his eyes, and he brushed it back, patting the side of his head to make sure all the other strands were in place before he let his attention drift back to the lake. He stretched his legs out, crossing them at the ankle, his arms wrapped over his chest, his hands tucked in on the opposite sides. It's just a theory. He lowered his voice until it was almost inaudible. But I think you're absorbing most of the side effects that we should be getting. I think it's an extension of your Sigma power.
Sounds about right, she muttered, not nearly as surprised as she should have been. Did you feel it when they tore out my light?
She didn't want to say it out loud, but Gabriel seemed to understand. His mouth immediately tightened, his arms bunching like he had suddenly formed fists.
Yes, he gritted quietly, but nowhere near what you would have felt. That's not normal. We should have been incapacitated like you. You took more than your fair share. If anyone suspected any of us were your mates before, that suspicion has now decreased dramatically. We should have been hospitalized right alongside you. Elijah thinks we're sharing the anchor side effects evenly amongst ourselves, spreading it thin. I think it's more than that. I think we're sharing it with you, and I think you're taking more than us.
She shivered, and he surveyed her slowly.
Let's go. You need to rest.
He stood, stretching out his neck to the left, and then the right, that same lock of hair falling out of place again. He tucked it back into line with an annoyed flick of his fingers, and started to walk in the direction of her dorm, expecting her to follow.
Oscar sat on the very edge of the rooftop, one long leg hanging and the other notched on the stone edge, long after Gabriel returned home. Mikkel came up to find him after checking on everyone else. He could be like an ill-tempered mother hen with a mauled face sometimes. Need a session? Mikkel asked, hands shoved into his pockets, eyes trained steadily on Oscar. Those aren't for me, Oscar shot back. Remember the part where we get paid at the end of them?
Mikkel rolled his eyes.
I'd prefer you try to beat me up rather than the alternative. What alternative?
Oscar challenged, swinging back over the ledge and walking toward the professor.
Mikkel scrubbed a scarred hand over his face, obviously frustrated at not being able to speak his mind. The camera trained on them was too close, now that Oscar had approached him. You hurting someone else, Mikkel finally gritted out lowly, before turning on his heel and stalking back to the stairs. Go to bed, Oscar. Alpha voice. Oscar grunted, falling still as he fought off Mikkel's influence. It was heavy and solid, like iron. It took him a good few minutes, and a deal of discomfort. But then he was free to do as he liked, shedding the heavy power that had tried to wrap around him. And he quite liked the idea of hurting somebody. A very particular somebody. His tread was light, silent, as he prowled downstairs, opening the door to Theodore's room. He reached the sleeping Alpha in a few easy strides, launching onto his torso and capturing his right hand. Oscar slammed the captured hand down onto the pillow beside Theodore's head, whipping a tactical penknife from his back pocket and extending the blade to rest against the fingers that still faintly carried Isabel's scent. The memory of sticky cherry syrup thick in the air had black spots dancing before his eyes, and he rested for control over himself. The Sigma was fucking his. Theodore had woken up at some point, but he'd quickly stopped fighting and now kept himself very still, his breathing measured, his eyes narrowed and watchful. Oscar. He sounded miraculously calm, his voice raspy with sleep. Didn't realize you felt that way about her. She's mine,
Oscar snarled, pressing the blade harder against Theodore's skin. He didn't mean to say that out loud. Theodore didn't even flinch. You want her? Want to date her? Want to take her to the movies on Ironside Row? Want to shake her asshole daddy's hand and fetch her coffee in the morning just the way she likes it?
I kissed her first,
Oscar growled, his voice sounding foreign to his own ears. Something wasn't right. He felt unhinged. More than usual. Theodore's words were registering, but barely. Fuck no, he didn't want to do those things. Shake her daddy's hand? More like rip her daddy's arm off and use it to backhand him until his face turned purple and blue. You resuscitated her, Theodore corrected. Moses kissed her first, but I saw her first. The door flew open, the light switching on. Moses stood in the opening, his sharp nose probably picking up the hint of blood in the air.
Fucking hell,
he muttered, getting an eyeful of whatever deranged look was on Oscar's face, and the blood dribbling down Theodore's hand to soak into his pillow before he backed out of the room. Oscar dismissed the open doorway, turning back to Theodore.
Touch her again, and I will cut off your fingers. Then I'll touch her with fucking stumps, Theodore growled back. I didn't...
He gritted his teeth, flicking his eyes to the doorway and lowering his voice.
I didn't bond her, asshole. I just helped ease the side effects.
Oscar, Elijah snapped, striding into the room. Moses and Gabriel close behind him. Look at me. The door clicked shut behind them.
Piss off, Oscar snarled. I'm busy.
You need to level out, Elijah said. You're surging. Focus, Oscar. Get your head in the game.
Surging. Damn it. Surging was bad. Surging meant he had to stop whatever he was doing. But he really wanted to cut Theodore's fingers off.
Theo isn't a threat, Elijah continued, his voice calm, deep, and resonant. The know-it-all fuck.
He's one of us. Part of the group. Part of the pack. Family.
Look at him, Oscar. He's family.
He can be family without his fingers,
Oscar grunted, the feral, ragged edges of his mind smoothing over slightly. He pulled back, retracting the blade and recapping it. Theodore finally winced in pain, clenching his fingers into a fist.
You gotta screw loose, Oscar.
What triggered you? Elijah asked, pulling out his phone, ready to take notes. Oscar breathed in deeply, resisting the urge to snatch Elijah's phone out of his hand and punch it through Theodore's teeth.
I think that part is obvious, Theodore grumbled, waving his bloodied fist before turning his glare back to Oscar.
Dude, get off me!
Oscar shoved against Theodore's chest, finding his feet and running his fingers agitatedly through his hair.
It might be obvious, but I need to hear it from him, Elijah countered. And I need to hear it in detail.
He touched her.
Oscar jerked his thumb back at Theodore, who was now reaching under his bed for a first aid kit.
In detail, Elijah repeated irritably, tapping away at his phone screen. I could give you details, Theodore offered, slapping the kit between his legs and rummaging through it. Despite his mocking tone, he didn't expand on the offer.
Smart move.
Not those details.
Elijah glared at them both through the lenses of his reading glasses.
What exactly triggered you, Oscar? And what did the surge feel like?
You know what?
Oscar gripped the top of Elijah's phone, pulling it down from his face.
It felt just like how I always feel like.
So, significantly unbalanced.
Gabriel pulled his own phone out, making notes while Elijah stared back at Oscar with an infuriatingly patient expression.
Yeah,
Oscar smirked at him.
Like that, but with less of the usual nonsense holding me back.
How different was it from your surge in Isabel's hotel room during the break?
Elijah asked, Well, I didn't want to fuck Theodore,
Oscar admitted, completely deadpan.
Wait, what?
Moses frowned, looking between them all. Theodore was making a low, grumbling sound.
You surged around Isabel?
Yes, Gabriel answered for Oscar. When the chain appeared.
Why don't I know about this?
Theodore demanded, springing from his bed, the first aid kit forgotten.
Because you're not her nanny.
Moses shot back, annoyed, before he shifted his attention to Elijah and Gabriel, who both seemed to be perfectly aware of everything. They had probably written half a research paper on it and were waiting on further data to finalize their hypothesis.
The surge in the hotel room was because you found out Isabel was hurt,
Elijah said, reading from, yep, his notes.
And this time because someone else touched her. Proprietary aggression,
Gabriel sighed.
Should have known it would be a problem with him,
Elijah agreed. He doesn't have a lot to his name.
Don't fucking need this,
Oscar began striding for the door, but Elijah quickly stepped in his way, holding up his palms.
None of us need this.
Elijah gentled his tone as he took off his glasses and shoved them into his pocket.
But I warned you all what would happen with so many alphas living together in such close quarters. It was manageable before... Isabel,
Gabriel supplied. Elijah shot him a narrow look.
I know her name.
Then use it.
Trouble in paradise,
Oscar interjected, making his tone sound bored when it was actually highly entertaining to watch the Wonder Twins split their shared brain cell in half to trade barbs.
It was manageable before Isabel,
Elijah ground out.
We need to get this under control before we all spiral. You,
he jammed a finger into Oscar's chest.
Up your training time. Up your sparring time. Don't back down until someone's bleeding. We need to get your aggression under control. Was planning on it anyway,
Oscar responded, in the least aggressive tone he could be bothered to muster. So, his normal tone, really.
I'll write up a new schedule for everyone.
Elijah sighed, nudging his reading glasses back on and moving around Oscar to reach for the door.
I think we're going to need to add an extra small group session with Mickey. Fine by me.
Oscar shrugged, shoving his hands into his pockets and rocking back on his heels. Elijah gave him a narrow-eyed look before opening the door and waving at the hallway.
After you. No, after you.
Oscar gave his best imitation of a smile. Gabriel snorted.
We aren't leaving you alone in here, Oscar. Fine,
Oscar snapped.
I was hoping to spare all your delicate sensibilities, but...
He strode back to the bed, snatched up Theodore's hand, and snapped two fingers back as the younger Alpha tried to get away.
The break was nice and clean. Hardly aggressive. Sweet dreams, everyone.
Oscar grinned around the room, striding for the door.
The violence eased something inside him, and he couldn't help but feel a spark of admiration for Theodore,
who managed to not make a single sound and was still holding onto an ominous silence. Hopefully, he was planning revenge.
That could be fun.
Chapter 3. Chains and Chokeholds. Isabel didn't see Killian for weeks. He seemed to disappear entirely. Even Theodore was distant, spending more and more time training or practicing, though he was still at every one of the small group sessions with Easton every morning. The Alphas were very careful to keep her surrounded, while still somehow maintaining their distance. She saw them all daily, and at least one of them had transferred into all of her classes, but they avoided the topic of Killian, and she was too scared to push for more information. Easton had upped the ferocity of their small group sessions, for everyone except Isabel. The others weren't even pretending to do vocal training anymore and were simply beating each other up. Brutally. They dragged themselves out of each session, panting and bruised, completely sapped of energy. She was too intimidated by Easton to ask what was going on,
and Theodore artfully evaded the question whenever she dared to bring it up. Ironically, the only Alpha she felt any normalcy with anymore was Nico. He called her out of her dorm room for training sessions a few times a week, and she was really starting to enjoy his company, especially after seeing him let loose on the other Alphas during Easton's sessions. It was now painfully obvious just how drastically he was holding back on her. Like, now.
"Again,"
he said, hauling her up. There wasn't even a drop of sweat on his brow. Her shirt was already sticking to her skin. She groaned, planting her hands on her knees.
"Just a minute."
She had gone back to her full academy schedule only a week ago, after several weeks of being banned from dance classes and practices. Her body was struggling with the increased amount of exercise.
"Take a break."
Nico reached over the ropes, grabbing two water bottles and tossing one to her. He sank to the mat, stretching his legs out and draining half the bottle before recapping it and rolling it away. She gulped the cool water, collapsing opposite him and trying to rub out the cramp in her calf with her free hand. He rolled his striking eyes at her, gripping her ankle and hauling her closer so that her leg landed over his lap. She almost sloshed water all over herself.
"You aren't one of my surrogates," she said. "You don't need to do that."
He gave her a flat, bemused look.
"No, I'm not. I'm your trainer."
"I'm too sweaty."
She tried to pull her leg away again, but he held firm, his brows dropping lower.
"Stop it," he ordered. "Let me check the muscle, and then you're free."
She wiggled uncomfortably. Nico didn't touch her unless it was to sweep her onto her ass and pull her up again so that he could knock her straight back down with a bored look on his handsome face. That was the extent of their physical contact. It wasn't that he made her uncomfortable. The problem was that his touch felt good, and she had no right feeling like that. Nico was as detached and cold toward her as the professors, always stringently maintaining boundaries and keeping their relationship black and white. Still, her body wasn't getting the message. Her skin warmed when his fingers dug into her muscles, pulling a strained moan of relief from her throat. His gaze shot straight to hers, but his fingers didn't still, deftly working the cramp out of the muscle.
"It's my birthday,"
he said conversationally.
"What?"
This time she did dribble water over herself. She quickly wiped her chin and set the bottle away.
"Today."
His well-formed brows arced up as if to ask, "Are you going to do anything about it?"
Happy birthday," she managed. "Why didn't you say anything earlier?"
"I was debating inviting you to hang out tonight."
His talented fingers brushed the full length of her calf, drawing a shiver out of her body that she tried to hide by shifting on her butt in a pretense of getting more comfortable.
"We're going to do a movie night."
"We?"
she croaked, even though she knew the answer. Nico gave her an exasperated look and then stood, sweeping her up again. He never let her take long breaks, and he didn't hang around with her after their sessions. She suspected it was because of the cameras. After airing their first few sessions and making as big a deal out of it as possible, the production team seemed to get bored, and they moved on when Nico didn't give the show anything interesting to air. Either that, or they had decided to stock up on footage for some diabolical future episode, which was always possible.
"I share a birthday with Killian,"
he said, as he effortlessly swept her onto her ass again, except this time the breath was knocked out of her from his words as well as his actions.
"He'll be there."
"Is he okay?"
She bounced back to her feet, dropping into the defensive position Nico had taught her. She gripped the opportunity to talk about Killian like a lifeline, her blood buzzing frantically. They all refused to talk about him, and she didn't want to text him in case he needed space from her.
"They removed him from Ironside for a little while,"
Nico answered, his tone casual but his eyes guarded,
"just to make sure he didn't know anything about Aaron's involvement in the Vermont attack."
The Vermont attack.
It was the first time anyone had said those words to her since the night of their disastrous dinner. Even Teek and Charlie were careful to skirt around the topic during their sessions, since Isabel had declared that she didn't want to talk about it. Hearing it mentioned so casually was like a physical kick to the stomach. The air whooshed out of her, and she winced. The chain around her wrist warmed, constricting tightly. She jumped a few inches, staring down at it. It had been acting up lately, warming or buzzing when her emotions went haywire, but never anything like this. It vibrated so hard it looked like it was moving. No, it was moving. It uncoiled like it was stiff from holding its shape for so long, stretching out languidly before darting up her arm, the metal warm and smooth against her skin. She shrieked, but Nico quickly snatched her wrist before she could pull it off.
"Don't ever mess with a soul artifact," he whispered, his eyes hard as the chain snuck beneath the sleeve of her shirt and crawled across the center of her chest, dipping into her cleavage.
It grew prickly, like the links were sprouting little metallic caterpillar legs, and Nico gripped her other hand when it tried to fly up to her chest. The chain settled along her sternum, and then it pinched in, those little metallic legs piercing her skin. Nico swore, his expression torn as she yelped.
"What the fuck is it doing?"
he groused, his usually controlled tone unsteady. A shrill ring sounded through the room. At first she thought it was a phone, but then she realized it was echoing all around her. An alarm.
I don't know,
she stuttered, as Nico's eyes flashed with unease, his grip on her tightening to the point of pain.
"What's that alarm? I've never heard it before."
"What alarm?"
he asked, as the sound dwindled into something softer, almost like a twinkle. He released her wrists, and her hands immediately tunneled into her shirt, her fingertips coming away wet with blood.
"It's embedded itself into my skin," she breathed out unsteadily. "But it's finished, I think."
She gripped Nico's forearm, using him to keep herself upright as a small whine of pain slipped from between her lips. The chain felt alive again, like it had been resting up and healing right alongside her these past few weeks, but now it desperately wanted to be a part of her again. Nico pulled her out of the ring without warning, tugging her in the direction of the bathroom.
"Let's get you cleaned up."
The statement was tight-lipped, his voice rigid with restraint. As soon as they passed through the door, he suddenly changed, his touch gentling, his eyes sparking with frantic energy.
"It's glowing,"
he hissed, pushing her up against the counter, his body tight behind hers. They both stared into the mirror at the subtle light peeking through her shirt, and she pulled down the neckline with shaking fingers, staring at the links nestled into her cleavage. It was thinner than before, the most delicate gold chain spouting little beads of blood that had smudged against her skin. She leaned forward, entranced, the pain falling away as that tinkling sound turned into a warm, happy hum before fading away into nothing. She could make out the tiny links arching from the chain to the skin on either side, little metallic hooks to secure the jewelry in place. The brighter it glowed, the less it hurt, until the wounds from those little hooks were completely healed. Nico was breathing hard against the top of her head, his hands braced either side of her, gripping the counter tightly.
"Are you okay?"
she asked him, watching his face wearily. He twitched, his gaze sweeping up to hers in the mirror. His energy was off. His usual warm and inviting whiskey scent was curdling, bubbling, and boiling until he smelled more like gasoline, the green sinking out of his eyes until the more dusky, tawny hue took over, darkening his entire expression.
"Damn it."
The word was spoken through his teeth, more a hiss than anything else.
"Give me a minute, Sigma."
His voice sounded completely different. A sense of danger skittered across her skin, his power suddenly swelling into the room like an ominous cloud, closing in against her mind like a metal compress. Her breath turned shallow, her thoughts tripping over themselves. It was eerily similar to what had happened to Sato in the hotel room in Nevada, and just like that time, her mind snapped back to her father, to when he would lose control. Sato hadn't acted like her father, but faced with that dangerous role of influence again, Isabel's mind was suddenly blank, filled with the trauma of her childhood. There was no room for her to kneel on the ground, to stretch out her back for her father's belt, to turn her head to the side against the ground where the carpet fibers would tickle her nostrils. And she was too scared to reach for her phone, to call Reed. She let out a low sound of distress, turning around with her shirt still tugged down to show him that she was fine. She wasn't bleeding anymore. It was instinctual, and it seemed to work. Nico's eyes narrowed in on her pale skin. His hands switched from the counter to her hips, drawing her up onto her toes. It didn't seem to be enough, because he pulled her up further, higher and higher. She scrambled to draw her legs up, needing to feel something beneath her, and he sat her on the counter, her legs tucked beneath her. It put her a little higher than him, his face level with her chest. Nico was wearing a completely alien expression, like the real him had stepped out for a while, allowing some kind of alpha predator to take his place. It terrified her, but he was the last person who would hurt her, outside the wrestling ring, and she repeated that fact inside her head. Nico stood up for her. He was doing all this so she could protect herself, and he had helped her through a panic attack with all the patience and kindness of a person who was used to caring for victims of violence, not like he was a perpetrator of it himself. It didn't matter that there was a dangerous rattle emanating from his chest. His strong hands drifted up her sides, uncaring that her shirt was still damp with sweat, his focus narrowing in on the few spots of blood showing through the material. She watched warily, both of them ignoring the trembling of her body as his hands drifted back down, gathering the hem of her shirt and pulling it up. His eyes flicked up to hers once, his alpha ring so swollen it almost seemed to be merging with his pupil, the black and gold meld of color turning him into a stranger for a brief moment. And then he was ducking, his warm breath scattered low across her belly. He pressed his face against her skin, breathing deeply, like he was trying to regain control of himself. But his attention was dragged up higher, past her belly button, to the bottom of the chain. He pushed her shirt up further, and a low growl vibrated out of his mouth, teasing along her skin. He flattened his tongue to the base of the chain, causing Isabel to jump in shock, but he didn't stop there. He dragged his tongue up the length of the chain, pushing her shirt higher and higher until the material was at her chin, bunched there, blocking his path. He buried his face in her shirt, his whole body vibrating, and she hesitantly tunneled her fingers into his hair, feeling the sweep of panicked violence that emanated off him. She tried to focus all of her energy on him, to ignore the fluttering in her stomach, the coolness of his saliva striking a line all the way up her sternum. His quiet rumbles were making her squirm, and she fought back the insane urge to pull her shirt the rest of the way off and see where else he licked. Christ, maybe she should have been spending a little more time with her surrogates. Or any time with her surrogates. Nico suddenly pulled back from her with a shudder, releasing her shirt. "How did you know what to do?" he demanded in a roughened tone. "Why the fuck does it feel like you've had experience with this?" She couldn't make sense of his tone, or the muddled press of emotions battering against her chest. Fury, possession, disquiet. "With Alphas?" she dared to ask, the words barely more than a squeak. My father is an alpha.
He's one alpha.
Nico's perfect brows pulled down, his lips pressing tightly together as he frowned.
And he lived outside the settlements. He's practically human.
She chewed on her lip, wondering if they were even talking about the same thing.
How did you know what to do?
He asked again. He wasn't moving back or releasing her, but at least his eyes were only focused on her face, and her shirt had mostly fallen back into place.
My father has rages. My mother taught me to always submit when he's angry.
Nico breathed in deeply, his nostrils flaring.
Rage.
The sweep of his emotions lashed out at her, but his face remained impassive, his eyes burning.
It's not the same thing,
he whispered.
We don't have rages. We have, well, according to Elijah, it's our hindbrain. Your father is an abuser. It's different. We don't want to hurt you. The last thing we want is to hurt you.
He trailed off, easing back slightly, his face dipping at the last second like he was quickly scenting her skin before he lifted her from the counter.
Your skin broke. I tasted blood.
He set her on her feet and then backed several paces away, running his hand down the front of his wrinkled shirt.
It must not have been deep enough to scar you.
She froze, realizing what could have happened, before quickly shaking her head. The chain healed the skin right after it pierced it. How is what just happened to you different to what happens to my father?
Surging only happens in alpha formations. Our hindbrain can be triggered to take control, turning us into, well, our base instincts. While we struggle to hold on to our humanity, the trigger usually needs to be remedied. You were hurt. It triggered me. You offered up your skin for me to taste and scent, which allowed me to reassure myself that you were okay.
She stared at him, a slow realization dawning. You weren't supposed to tell me that, were you? He smiled slightly, shaking his head.
He motioned to her chest. I figured I owed you an explanation.
She snorted out a shaky laugh.
Yeah, maybe. You were a gentleman about it, though.
He looked like he was blushing.
We shouldn't linger in here. I'll see you at the dorm in an hour. Don't come in smelling like blood, unless you want a riot on your hands. And go easy on Killian.
Go easy on him?
One more thing.
He stepped up to her, ignoring her question.
If it's about alphas and it isn't common knowledge, best you don't repeat it. The whole base instincts thing in alpha formations, the officials don't need to know. I really can't emphasize that enough.
She nodded, watching as he walked out, before wetting a paper towel and cleaning the remaining smudges of blood from her chest. The chain now looked completely innocent, the glow dying away.
Nico escaped the gym and walked all the way back to the dorm without a flicker of emotion for the cameras. But as soon as he was enclosed safely inside his own room, he quickly sank to the floor, his eyes staring blankly through the window, a tremor taking up residence in his hands. He could still taste her blood on the back of his tongue, and there was a burning, overwhelming urge exploding somewhere in the back of his brain, trying to convince him to run back there and lick up her quivering torso again and again until the metallic taste of her blood mixed with the thick, sweet scent that had tried to creep out of her when his head was buried in her shirt, and he was trying to wrestle himself under control. This should have been easier. He liked the girl, but he wasn't desperately in love with her, or desperate for a mate. He just liked her as a person. It should have been easy to brush off this incident, to hunt down Elijah and record it the way they were supposed to be doing. But selfishly, he wanted to keep this to himself. Elijah didn't have fucking boundaries. He might ask if Nico got turned on. He was worse than the goddamn officials. Nico groaned,
scrubbing a hand down his face. It was getting harder not to touch her. And worse than that, he knew it wasn't the bond. She was small and sweet and vulnerable, and also none of those things at all. And he was struggling to keep his thoughts under control when his hands were always on her, and her scent, heavy with sweat, was always clinging to his clothes. And now her blood was in his mouth. She was invading him, and he didn't like it. Isabel had an hour. She should probably run back to her room and get changed, but instead she found herself walking toward the chapel, her fingers running over the chain now fused to her skin. It wasn't even sore anymore, and it hummed happily beneath her touch, sitting almost flush with her skin, like a tattoo made of metal. She checked the chapel first, but when she only found a first year huddled before a candle, she skipped around to the back, where there was a small residence surrounded by an enclosed courtyard. She pressed the button on the outside of the gate and rocked back on her heels, waiting. It was Sophia who came out, Luis's head appearing in the opening of the door his sister had left hanging open. He peered at Isabel with big eyes, his spectacles hanging off his nose again. Sophia tucked her black hair behind her ear, flashing a wrist stacked with shining, beaded bracelets. "Was expecting you sooner, to be honest." Sophia unlatched the gate, standing to the side and waving Isabel in. "I don't have long," Isabel said, her eyes darting around what appeared to be a haphazard herb garden overgrown with weeds, as Sophia flicked the gate shut and led the way back to the house. Luis skittered away, hiding in the next room, his owlish eyes blinking out from another shadowy doorway as Sophia led her into a pokey kitchen. "Tea?"
Sure.
Isabel glanced around. "Where's the guardian?"
"Mom is sleeping. She gets these awful migraines that knock her right out. But let's be honest, you came here to talk to me."
"I did?" Isabel furrowed her brow at the other girl. Sophia's lips twitched.
"You want information, but do you want it from the obviously super cool and super pretty soul keeper with the world's most adorable little helper, or from the guardian who cut your soul artifact off and bargained to keep it?"
She didn't wait for an answer. Her light mahogany gaze caught on the top of the chain peeking out from Isabel's now stretched neckline, and she dropped the kettle she had picked up, the sound of it clattering back to the stovetop, making Luis flick back into the shadows.
"Is that?"
Sophia drifted forward, eyes wide in wonder.
"It just happened."
Isabel covered it with her hand, feeling oddly protective.
"It's kind of embedded into my skin."
Sophia whistled, taking in Isabel's body language before backing off and spinning to the kettle. She pulled down three mugs and dropped tea bags into each of them, glancing furtively to the doorway her brother was hiding in.
"You have any idea what it means?"
she asked.
"I don't know what anything means anymore," Isabel said. "And I don't trust anyone."
"Understandable." Sophia leaned against the counter, folding her arms. "After what that bitch did to you. We heard the officials talking about it in the hospital. They didn't bother much with your friendship on the show, but the officials said you guys were close and that she was always the first person there to comfort you after she orchestrated an attack against you."
"Well," Isabel scoffed, "she could have done without the knowledge that the officials were gossiping about the attacks they allowed to happen."
"Yeah, it was pretty messed up. I really thought she was on my side."
"Maybe she was," Sophia shrugged. "For a little while, anyway. I mean, it makes sense to pretend to be your friend while they haze you, in a sadistic sort of way. But when you gained some popularity on the show, maybe she tried to switch things up to get some screen time with you. Until she thought you were bonded to her crush, that is. Then I suppose she had to weigh up whether the screen time was worth it."
"You know the game pretty well, for someone who isn't even playing it."
"Girl," she laughed. "Everyone knows how this game works.
At Ironside, you're predator or you're prey. There's no in-between. And the prey? Well, they never make it very far, do they? I'm surprised you're still kicking.
I'm not prey. Sophia poured hot water into the mugs, setting one on the far edge of the counter before carrying the others to the small circular dining table.
Luis ducked out from the hallway, grabbing the third mug and hovering by the counter indecisively. Those alphas are definitely trying to push you into the predator category, especially with all that initiation crap Sato started a little while ago.
Sophia allowed, pulling out a chair and plopping into it, folding her legs as she blew on her tea.
It's pretty obvious what he was trying to do, but you aren't there yet. Maybe the Vermont attack was just the push you needed.
Isabel sat, pulling her mug closer, fiddling with the tag from the teabag as Luis approached his sister's side, eyes fixed on Isabel as he nervously fiddled with his overlong sleeves.
Anyway, Sophia waved a hand as though to disperse the topic. You said you didn't have long. What is it you wanted to ask?
These soul artifacts. Isabel touched the links through her shirt. What do they do?
Sophia grinned like she approved of the question. Literally anything. It entirely depends on the god who gifted it to you, if you believe that kind of thing.
Which we do, Luis squeaked. It's really real. I thought the guardian said it was from the woman in the picture, Isabel asked, switching her gaze between them.
Aphelina? Sophia clicked her tongue. I find that hard to believe. You were gifted the chain before you even knew who your mate was. Her gifts are usually preoccupied with love and desire. So if you were gifted the chain when you were alone, then there's no reason for it to be from her.
Well, that answered that question. If it was all real, then Aphelina had been trying to matchmake her and Sato, which could only mean one thing. The gifted goddess of love was a terrible matchmaker. And now? Isabel dropped her hand. What does it mean that it's doing this?
May I?
Sophia brushed her hand through her brother's inky mop of hair before she stood, rifling through the kitchen drawers to pull out a magnifying glass. Isabel hesitated.
It's okay, Luis said shyly, slipping into a third chair. Sophie, he pronounced it like Soph-E, is really good at this.